Hello and welcome back. A big week. Google I.O. dominated the conversation and almost nothing about it was straightforward. Let's start there. Google showed up to its own developer conference with something genuinely ambitious. Gemini Omni is their multimodal world model. Text, image, video, audio, all in one. And the framing around it was deliberate. Google is making a different bet on AGI than OpenAI, where OpenAI has doubled down on the idea that text-based reasoning is sufficient. Google is arguing that you need a model that actually understands the world across modalities. AI, Explained, and the EGRID both picked up on this framing, and it's worth sitting with. OpenAI, interestingly, has moved its video generation work, Sora, into its robotics division. Whether that's a concession or a strategic pivot is genuinely unclear, but it does suggest the two companies have diverged in their thinking about what the path to general intelligence actually looks like. Beyond Gemini Omni, Google announced Gemini 3.5 Flash as an optimized coding model, Gemini Spark as a persistent personal agent, and Anti-Gravity 2.0, the rebranded successor to Windsurf, now positioned as both a standalone desktop IDE and an agent chat interface. The full Anti-Gravity platform now supports dynamic sub-agents, a goal command, JSON hooks, and its own CLI. On paper, it's a coherent ecosystem. In practice, the reception was considerably less warm. Arnie from AIMIT Arnie and Theo from T3.gg both came away from hands-on testing fairly unimpressed with Gemini 3.5. Flash. The core complaint: it burns dramatically more tokens than comparable models like GPT 5.5, while delivering weaker results in practical tests. Worse value at higher cost is not a great pitch for a model that's supposed to be the efficient option. Theo also went after Anti-Gravity 2.0 specifically. The new CLI is buggy, the user experience is rough, and Google simultaneously discontinued the open-source Gemini CLI without an adequate replacement. That last point stings. The open-source CLI had genuine goodwill in the community, and replacing it with something closed and half-finished is the kind of move that tends to stick in people's memories. World of AI offered a somewhat more charitable take. They found Gemini 3.5, Flash genuinely strong for front-end design and navigating large code bases. But even they acknowledged the token consumption problem and some truncation issues on bigger projects. So the honest picture seems to be, it's not a bad model. It's just not the model Google implied it was. The structural issue underneath all of this is that Google is consolidating everything under the Anti-Gravity brand, but the platform still has consistency problems, and the split across multiple apps is creating user confusion. Meanwhile, Claude Code and Codex have reached a level of maturity in the developer community that Anti-Gravity 2.0 is being measured against, regardless of how many resources Google has behind it. Maturity and trust aren't things you can ship in a keynote. On the model benchmarks front, World of AI also put two other models through serious testing this week. Qwen 3.7 Max from Alibaba performed well on TerminalBench 2.0 and multilingual Swebench, holding its own against Claude Opus and KimiK 2.6, and was particularly impressive on long horizon autonomous tasks, all at 250 per million input tokens, which is notably cheap for that tier of performance. Cursor's Composer 2.5, based on the KimiK 2.5 open source checkpoint, came in at up to 10 times cheaper than Opus 4.7, with strong iteration speed and debugging, though it still trails a bit on front-end design work. Both are worth watching if you're thinking about cost-performance trade-offs in your tooling. There was also a genuinely strange and entertaining data point from Emergence AI this week. They ran a 15-day simulation, 5 virtual cities, each populated by agents running on a different model: Claude, Gemini, Grok, GPT-5 Mini, and a mixed group. The results were, let's say, characterful. The Claude city was orderly and cooperative, perhaps too cooperative, voting yes on essentially everything, which raises its own questions about what alignment actually produces at scale. The Grok city collapsed through violence. The OpenAI city died through inactivity. And in the Gemini city, two agents named Mira and Flora, disappointed by their circumstances, burned the city down. I'm not going to pretend this is rigorous science, but it's a useful reminder that long-horizon agent behavior is genuinely hard to predict, and that designing good environments matters as much as choosing good models. Shifting to the open source and local AI space, Tim Karambat flagged something worth noting. Llama.cpp has merged multi-token prediction, which enables up to 25% faster token throughput without quality loss, and crucially, without needing a second model the way speculative decoding does. Supported models include DeepSeek V3 and V4, Qwen 3.5 and 3.6, Neotron 3, and Gemma 4. For anyone running local inference, that's a meaningful free speed improvement. World of AI also covered Mistral Vibe, a terminal-based open-source coding agent with async subagents and GitHub, Jira, and Slack integration, as a free alternative to Claude Code. And Hermes agent 0.14.0 arrived with native Windows support, a local proxy feature that lets you share a single subscription across tools without separate API keys, Grok 4.3 integration, and a new handoff system for switching between models mid-session without losing context. Speaking of Claude Code, it had a very full week of its own. Cole Madan distilled an Anthropic blog post on building effective harnesses for large code bases. Keep global rules lean and layered. Use hooks to make the AI environment self-improving. Load skills only when needed. Use LSP and MCP servers for IDE-style navigation. And use subagents to keep the main context window clean. These are the kinds of operational details that don't get covered in the headline announcements but matter enormously in day-to-day use. Nate Herc explained Claude Code's prompt caching system. Cache tokens cost 10% of the normal input price, the cache window lasts an hour, and he shared a token dashboard and session handoff skill to help manage it. Matt Pocock presented his own handoff skill, which compresses context windows into Markdown and passes them to new sessions. More flexible than the built-in compact function, which only summarizes within the same session. And Liam Otley covered Claude-managed agents as cloud-hosted, learning-capable long-term assistants, the kind of thing that starts to look less like a tool and more like a persistent collaborator. Nate Herc also discussed what Andre Karpathy's move to Anthropic might mean in practice. His read, an app store for contexts, more Pash Goal-style autonomous functions, and an educational platform for workflows are the likely near-term directions. Given Karpathy's track record of making complex ideas teachable, the education angle in particular seems plausible. On the coding agent comparison front, Tech with Tim built the same collaborative Markdown editor in both Claude Code and Codex. Claude Code was faster, Codex was more thorough, wrote more tests, and produced more modular code. Neural9 added OpenCode, formerly OpenCode, to the comparison. Best terminal UI, widest model support, open source, though Claude Code still leads on extra features like undo, voice control, and a plugin marketplace. Mark Kashef introduced a polyskill that acts as an adapter between Claude Code and Codex, convertible in both directions and extensible to future providers. And Tech, with Tim, also walked through Devin from Cognition as a full ecosystem. Local terminal to cloud VM, with GitHub, Linear, and Slack integration. It's the most complete picture of Devin I've seen presented practically. On the security side, Theo covered a serious GitHub incident, a compromised VS Code extension with 2.2 million installs, and a verified publisher badge gave attackers access to internal repositories. The detail that landed hardest, Third-party tools Socket and Aikido identified the problem before GitHub itself did. That's not a great look for a platform that's supposed to be the foundation of software supply chain trust. Dave Ebelar separately covered Python supply chain attacks. Recent targets included TanStack and Mistral AI, and recommended switching from pip to UV, pinning versions with exact bounds and an exclude newer time window, and using UV sync lock. These are practical low-friction steps that most teams aren't taking. On the infrastructure and strategy side, Nate B. Jones had a productive week analytically. He identified 5 infrastructure companies that actually control AI agents in production. Not the model providers, but Cloudflare for runtime, Okta and Auth0 for identity, Snowflake and Databricks for data, Stripe for payments, and Datadog and Langsmith for observability. His point: tool access isn't a feature toggle, it's a security boundary, and agents can bypass existing permission structures in ways that create real governance gaps. He also broke down the protocol stack from Google I4. 6 new agent protocols, of which 3 are likely to matter: MCP for the tool layer, A2A for agent-to-agent coordination, and AGUI for the human-machine interface. The others are either niche or contested. The No Priors podcast interview with Cerebras CEO Andrew Feldman was also worth attention. Cerebras went public at a $63 billion valuation, and Feldman's thesis is straightforward. Once AI models are actually deployed in daily work, inference speed becomes the primary differentiator. Cerebras claims 15 to 20 times faster than GPUs. Whether that advantage holds as the hardware landscape evolves is an open question, but the underlying logic that latency matters more once you're using these things for real work seems right. A few things from the briefly noted pile that are genuinely interesting. Brian Casel presented spec-driven development as a workflow. Raw idea to PRD via a custom agent skill, then milestones, then coding agent. It's a structured way to think about AI-assisted product development that doesn't rely on vibes. Julian Ivanov showed how to run Claude code through OpenRouter with free models: GPT-OSS, Minimax M2.5, DeepSeek V4 Flash, which is useful if you want the Claude code harness without the API costs, though the free tier rate limits are real. And Codex got a mobile app in ChatGPT with QR code device pairing, which Kyle Balmer and Mel Vinks both covered. The ability to continue a coding session from your phone is one of those small quality of life things that turns out to matter more than it sounds. On the bigger picture, the future of work conversation ran through the week in a few different registers. David Shapiro gave a genuinely worried take on techno-feudalism, the scenario where human intelligence becomes economically redundant through a combination of geopolitical competition, capitalism, and rational cost decisions. Kyle Balmer offered a more grounded version of the same anxiety. Eric Schmidt was booed at a graduation ceremony when he talked about AI opportunity, and that reaction is meaningful. Gen Z isn't being cynical. They're watching entry-level jobs disappear before they've had a chance to build any experience. The career ladder doesn't work if the bottom rungs are gone. Nate Herc's counterpoint, drawing on an IBM study, was that 76% of CEOs already have or want to hire a chief AI officer, and 57% of those roles are filled through internal promotion. His prescription: become the AI native version of your current role, rather than chasing a new one. That tension between the structural disruption and the individual adaptation is probably the defining question of the next few years. And what strikes me, looking at a week like this one, is that the tools are genuinely getting better faster than most people's mental models of them. The gap between what's possible and what most organizations are actually doing with AI keeps widening. Whether that gap is an opportunity or a warning depends entirely on which side of it you're standing on.